Radio 7.1.
Vibing out.
7.1. Yep.
It doesn't matter. None of this matters. We're all gonna die soon.
Michigan football, everybody. We did win, We got a football win in football.
Yes. I'm Brian Cook.
I'm Seth Fisher.
And I'm Alex Drain.
And we have
Alex Drain a headset real soon, but it's a process. You gotta vet it. You gotta make sure that it's not gonna give the playbook to Ohio State. No, they need it. Anyway, coming off a 47-14 win over Western Michigan, Michigan faces the Washington Huskies in what was billed as an early season matchup of super middleweights.
So yeah, well, we took care of our business, which is not what I thought would happen. I thought that we might be in a different spot, but I also thought that we were going to talk about sponsors first at the top of our.
Oh, we could do that before we discuss anything else.
Well, I'd love to do that. So we are brought to you to Zemgo Radio. We're sponsored by Underground Printing on behalf of all the unique and amazing institutions in Ann Arbor. UGP has 3 retail locations in Ann Arbor and offer thousands of University of Michigan athletic products, many of which are in Mays, by the way, hint, hint. Check out UGPMichiganApparel.com or stop by when you're in town. We also want to thank our associate sponsors, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshore Lending, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Michigan Law Grad, Human Element, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, the Raw Power app for iOS by Gentleman Coders, Prentice 4M, and SignalWire, which is why I can talk to you guys and you're not like on a 2-second delay anymore like we were on Zoom.
All right. So Michigan faces Washington, who lost to FCS Montana 13-7. I guess we'll start with the offense because that was kind of the news from that game. In that, this wasn't an FCS upset where, Washington was driving the field and then a series of hijinks happened that prevented them from scoring. So they went 78 yards for a touchdown on their first drive. I think they got 50 yards on their second drive. And then the rest of their day was completely ineffective. So this wasn't a weird loss, really. Washington pretty much walked right into this and deserved to lose to Montana. We don't really know much about Montana because they had like 2 games in the spring and they didn't really have a season. We don't really know much about Washington because they had that weird abbreviated Pac-12 season. Writing the preview for this game was very frustrating.
I know one thing about Montana, and that is Bob Stitt recruited most of this team. So when he was that coach there through 2017, and now I don't think he's even in football anymore, but it's still enough. Bob Stitt was at fault for this.
So the thing that just kind of leapt out when you watch the tape is that it just doesn't seem like Washington is any good, right? Like, their top 3 wide receivers were out, and then they lost the 4th guy on the first play of the game. So, okay, there's some qualifiers built in there, but this is a team that was supposed to have the best returning line in the Pac-12. And, if you look at their skill position guys, unless they get some of these wide receivers back, it's like Giles Jackson, who caught four balls for 15 yards in this game, and not a whole lot else.
They got a butt.
Including their quarterback.
They got a butt.
What?
They got a butt. They got Kate Otten.
Yes, yes.
Yeah,
yes,
so they have
they
a
have
Jake
a good
butt.
Tight end. Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
And that's, but like, that's why there's really not a whole lot of excuse, because Kate Otten is supposed to get, 50% of their throws. Like, that's their guy. Like, that was their offense.
But you can't build a passing offense around a tight end, right? Like,
2015 Michigan, 2016 Michigan, like it works. I mean, yeah, yes, you need to have other guys, but like that guy is supposed to be the threat. And Alex, I mean, you did the game for FFF. Like, did you see them throw to Cade when he was not like just wide open? Like, did they test?
Yeah, they tried to force it into him on the final interception of the game that sealed the game. For me, I feel ripped off. Like, I want my money back because I bought into Washington's offensive line in the enemy previews. And, they have this preseason All-American left tackle and a 6th-year center and 5 returning offensive line starters. And they just got beaten into the ground by an FCS DL, like beaten into the ground. And not just like block on block, but there was... I clipped 3 different plays of unblocked rushers, one coming from the left side, one coming from the right side, one coming up the middle, untouched to the quarterback. I mean, it was really bad. And their only effective runs were outside the tackles on jet sweeps from Giles Jackson. I mean, I clipped one run play, which was their longest, I believe, of the day. It was like 10 yards, and it saw Richard Newton break two to three tackles weaving through bodies. I mean, they got very little push up front, and Dylan Morris was under a lot of heat. And, you know, we all watched 2017 Michigan. It's tough when your offensive line is getting ripped apart. And it's all the more baffling that that happened against this quality of opponent and with this personnel that is this experienced and this touted. I mean, it makes no sense. It makes no sense.
Are we going to go up to the offensive line coach and rip his mask off and it's going to be Tim Drefnow? He's going to be like, I would have gotten away with it if it weren't for you meddling bloggers.
Isn't it John Donovan? Wasn't he an offensive line coach originally and like became an offensive coordinator under Franklin? I thought that was that might be Donovan's like, because like that's his thing is getting quarterbacks killed, right? Like that, like
he did coach Christian Hackenberg.
That was like sanctions Penn State. So trying circumstances.
It was a little after sanctions though. It was like, you know, they had 3 years.
They were trying to like dig out from sanctions.
Yeah, yeah. Right? It was the early Franklin years. The other thing is that this team, and this is play calling related too, but also Dylan Morris related, they have no recourse if they fall behind. Like watching their 2 minute drills, they had two of them, one which got stopped on fourth down and one was a pick. It was painful. I mean, they do not trust him or do not have the receivers or both to throw it more than like 8 yards down the field. And
well, and you caught the formation thing where when they go under center, they ran two-thirds of the time and ran play action the other third of the time. And then from the gun, they had 8 runs and 42 passes, which is just like, you're killing me, bro.
John Donovan!
What are we doing here?
Am I the only one who remembers like scouting Penn State in 2014 and 2015? Do you remember like the Lasers game, the Atomic Dog game? Like, do you remember the offense? Do you remember Penn State's like offensive game plan in that thing? It was just like that's John Donovan. I did a Penn State book with like the Penn State bloggers
era. Inform the people who might not have as identical a memory as you about the game plan in that game?
It was just lots of tight ends and basically like let the running back try to find whichever just stretch it out the whole time. And like they stretched us in 2014 when Michigan was good against stretches and bad against everything else on the DL. And then don't want to go that far, but like in 2015, that was when Glasgow was out, right? And we just gotten stretched to death the game before by Indiana. And then we got stretched to death the week after by Ohio State. And they did not run, I think they ran zone stretch twice and they got, you know, two big runs out of Saquon Barkley, and that was it. But this is the guy who got, like, don't you not remember Saquon Barkley getting, like, 2 yards per carry in some games? That was John Donovan.
And Washington does not have Saquon Barkley.
Nope.
hurting at skill positions, and they have a vintage game manager quarterback. And
that seems like the really nice way to put it. He doesn't run. He doesn't have a big arm. That the fade you clipped to Giles Jackson was just sad all around.
And that was the only time they threw downfield. The only time.
Giles Jackson was lined up as an outside receiver, which is disturbing to begin.
Because John Donovan doesn't use slots.
And then he runs a fade, and then the fade is probably 10 yards short. He had to like fully stop, and he still couldn't get back to the ball. So this might not be the game where Vincent Gray, his improvement gets tested. I'm fine with.
Yeah, if you lock Giles Jackson to Dax, then that should probably do it.
Yeah, I mean, the only question for me is how they choose to approach Otten. You know, I mean, do they use a linebacker? Do they use a safety? I mean, that's if they don't get any wide receivers back, and even if they do, he's the primary weapon. You know, contain Cade Otten. I don't know who else there is going to hurt you.
Well, they're like a two tight end team a lot, right? So we're actually
they'll run Devin Culp out in the flat. He's not the same level of target as Opp.
Well, I'm not saying that they're going to throw it to him a lot. What I was suggesting is that so against Western Michigan they were a base nickel, and so we didn't really get to see this 3-4 how it operated much, if at all. So this is going to be a situation where they are going to put some guys out there, and Michigan is going to have to like see if this five-man front actually works. And this might not be the best test, but one thing I'm a little bit leery about is that we've seen teams come out and it's week one and they don't look like themselves and weird things happen, and then they kind of get the you know, they get things righted eventually in week two. So it is possible that this offensive line comes out in week two and is unrecognizable from what it was against Montana. And then, you know, I think that's a big part of the path to a Washington victory, is that the mirage here was not the predictions about the offensive line, but the week one performance. And then Michigan's defensive tackles just can't hold up against a real Pac-12 OL. And that's not saying that's likely to happen, but I wouldn't discount it.
I mean, I haven't gotten to watch the full Montana game, but I remember watching Washington a couple times last year. I think they only played four games, so I might have actually seen their entire season. But, like, they took their offensive linemen and shuffled them around. So, like, Julius Buelo and Henry Bainavalu, I don't know the pronunciation correct, but, like, both those guys were offensive tackles. Buelo is 6'8", and Bainavalu is 6'7", 6'6". So they moved those guys outside from tackle, and then they moved the guard, Victor Kern, out to right tackle, and he's like 6'2", 6'3". So, like, everyone seems to be in, like, the wrong position. Now, Luke Wattenberg's their center. They moved him in from guard. That's not as big of a deal, but he kind of looks like a tackle as well. So they're just a very weird-built line.
Well, and it really showed. They just didn't really have much of anything that came easily, right? They couldn't scheme themselves, like, little hook routes or just everything was such a slog against an FCS team. And so, it's not like this was an explodes in every direction kind of game, right? Like, sometimes you'll get a team that just lays a stinker because their guys are erratic and they can hit big plays, but then they can also just mess up. And that didn't seem like Washington at all. It just seems like their running back is just a guy, and I know all the wide receivers are out. And then their quarterback can't push the ball downfield, so it didn't really feel like they had a whole lot of upside, you know. But this is a defense it's a new defense. We have a lot of questions about it, so we are going to get to some answers. But it kind of feels like the only answers we can get are bad ones.
Well, and I think we run their defense. They're the closest thing to our defense that I think we have on the schedule, where they have, like, defensive ends. I mean, we'll get to that in a bit. But, like, just for our sake, like, I think that they probably have seen Michigan's defense, or at least the new defense, a lot more in practice than they will, I guess, other forms of, like, we're actually going to look pretty, like, terrible to them, I think, because they face a much better defense than ours, who've been doing it a lot longer under Jimmy Lake.
All right, we're going to take a break, come back, and talk about the other side of the ball, which is much less despondent for the Huskies.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle, whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion. UGP is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing down people to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out the order. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Hey, it's Nick Hopwood, founder and president at Peak Wealth Management. We have a lot in common. We both went to Michigan. We're both huge fans, but I'm concerned about how much time you're spending on Michigan football recruiting. This could be time spent with me poring over your cash flow and Roth conversion strategy. How are these Roth conversions going to get done with you spending all your time and energy on MGoBlog looking at the next five-star recruits? Hey, all kidding aside, if you're addicted to MGoBlog and you want to outsource some of your financial planning to an expert, consider us, peakwm.com/MGoBlog. At Peak, we work with people people in a variety of situations. Some of our clients are young professionals looking to optimize their savings and investments. For young people, time is the key. Some of our clients are super affluent trying to figure out when they can retire. Some are high net worth retirees looking for a second opinion on how their money's working for them. Get your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
Passion for e-commerce.
Sell stuff online.
Security. Performance.
Conversion.
Beautiful user experiences.
Belle expérience utilisateur.
Monthly marketing.
PPC SEO.
Make your user a customer.
Conversion.
Audio perfume for online retailers. Love your website. Let Human Elements show you how. Available at human-element.com and find department stores, not find department stores.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
approximately $100,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Hello, welcome back to MGO Radio 7.1.
You got it.
Discussing me. What? Thank you. I pride myself on my accuracy. We're not going to talk about the Washington defense, which is in a much less tattered state. They held Montana to 13 points, which is a respectable number, despite the fact that you're playing an FCS foe. And we're going to let Alex try to pronounce their defensive tackles right now.
I would have to look up the Thule last name. Taki is just Taimani, right?
Yeah,
it's phonetically.
Oh, it's a great one. It's Thule Latuli Gasanoa.
Yeah, I had it in my head last night, but
I was when we were doing the book event for Hail of the Victors, Carl Grapentine was like, he brought their roster to practice, like he was already working on it weeks ahead of time, and he was just like, "Look at this one, Thule Latuli Gasanoa," and I'm like, "That's I can't wait to get in the stadium now."
I wonder if when Michigan schedules BYU or Utah, Carl just sits with a drink and grimly stares into the middle distance.
He still talks about Hawaii like it was like his war, right? Like, oh, yeah.
But well, so they have these two big, good defensive tackles, both in the kind of Brian Monet space. But one thing that jumped out when I was doing the preview is last year in their four games, they had 10 sacks. Seven of them were from one guy who's out for the year with an Achilles injury. And if you watch their defensive ends, they don't really have anyone on that level. So they're probably not going to get a ton of pressure from the inside. They're relying on unproven defensive ends to try to get to the quarterback. And they didn't really blitz a whole lot except for some corner stuff.
Yeah, the DB blitz was their most effective blitz package. The defensive ends, I mean, Seth and I had quite the Slack conversation discussing whether they were defensive ends or linebackers because, you know, they have a 3-4 nominally, but there are some guys that are definitely linebackers. There are some guys that are definitely defensive ends.
Well,
they're
Alex,
all just edge defenders.
Alex is like, okay, is this guy a defensive end or a linebacker? I'm like, okay, is he like 240 pounds or 260 pounds? He's like, oh, he's like 260. I'm like, all right, defensive end. He's like, but he goes out in coverage. I'm like, does he really go out in coverage? Is like, you know, how Mike Martin used to like drop into coverage. Like, does he actually like take the running back on a wheel route? And he's like, yes, he took the running back on a wheel route. So they have a 260 pound. Is that what his weight's listed at?
It was 270, I believe. 6'6", 270, covering a running back on a wheel route.
So yeah, linebacker.
So they had some guys that the edges were interesting. There was room to attack on the edge, and Montana's not a running quarterback offense. They didn't run their quarterback much, except on the goal line where it worked brilliantly. The edge, Jeremiah Martin, bit just hook, line, and sinker, and the quarterback walked into the end zone. There may be room to do that, but you know, it's the, there's not going to be a ton of pressure probably, but you have to be ready for the corner blitz, and that's going to be on, you know, Cade McNamara identifying pre-snap who the blitzer could be off from the DBs, and obviously the offensive line making sure they have their assignments ready, running backs in picking up pass protection. That's going to be the concern when blitzes do come, because it's probably not Devin Bush coming up the middle. It's probably Trent McDuffie coming from the cornerback spot or a different corner. You know, maybe they're nickeled. It depends on the play.
Speaking of McDuffie, he is the star of this defense and probably the team. He's getting a lot of NFL hype. People are talking about him as potentially the top cornerback available in this year's draft. Super athletic guy and good in coverage. So going to be an issue for one of Michigan's receivers. I don't know really who. I don't know if they're going to match without Ronnie Bell. I doubt it. But, you know, they held Montana to under 5 yards an attempt themselves. Again, context, we have no idea how good of a performance that actually is. But given the fact that they weren't getting a ton of pressure on the quarterback, and Montana has historically been, you know, a solid FCS program, I think that's an indication that their back seven is at least solid and covered.
Yeah, I would agree. There's going to be, whenever you play a team that's playing a lot of zone, there's going to be some windows. Montana had a few windows. I clipped a couple. Quarterback didn't really make the throws, but you don't really expect an FCS quarterback to fit it into that tight window to break it open. We'll see if Cade can do that. But obviously there will be yards underneath in the flat, so it's really, can they establish the game on the ground, test the edges, rip off a few long running plays, because that's what I came away from, was Montana could have scored more if they had, you know, Michigan's running backs. There were several plays that you were like, hey, if that's Blake Corum, that's six. And instead, you know, the running back gets tackled by the safety 10 yards from the end zone. So if they can get a few of those plays and just get the underneath passes, they might have some room, but this probably isn't a defense you're going to be over the top for the 70-yard pass.
And that's been a long time. Like, Jimmy Lake, since he's been there, he was, like, the greatest defensive backs coach in the country. Then he was, like, you know, a great DC who is known for defensive backs. Now he's, you know, a head coach, but he's still kind of running the defense. And, like, Jimmy Lake defenses, they always have. I mean, there's so many guys in the NFL who went to Washington right now who are, you know, the 3-star cornerbacks, 5-star cornerbacks, doesn't matter. Like, he finds them, he develops them. And, I mean, I figure that's not how Michigan's going to want to get their yards. Like you said, like, the attacking those edges is probably, you know, what Michigan wants to do when, against this team.
Yeah, so if this is a, this might be a game for, I don't know what it's called, speed and, what is it?
I forgot.
Space?
It's been a long time. I
forgot.
It's a long speed time. Speed in some sort of, you know, area, speed and grass, speed and yeah.
But so this is a team that has a good secondary, it has some questions on the edge, and it has a couple good defensive tackles. It seems like that sort of area around the hashes, getting sprint outs, that kind of stuff would be the way to attack them. And you're not going to do that every play, obviously, but you should probably have a heavy dose of Blake Corum going laterally first and then vertically.
Pin and pull. I mean, we didn't see any pin and pull against Western, but, like, you know, that was
no,
the...
we barely saw anything, right, though?
Yeah. Like... But, yeah, I mean, that was the base offense for a couple of years, so I, you know, I'm sure they still have it, and that looks like exactly what you want to run against these guys.
Yeah, I mean, they also, they're two traditional inside linebackers. Ulofficio, I believe is the pronunciation, Ulofficio, I don't know, but he's pretty good. The other guy, Jackson Sermon, is more of just kind of a traditional linebacker. I think there is room for Michigan to you know, get the speed matched up with him. You know, he wears, like, the neck padding, which I always...
Oh, he's got a neck roll?
Yeah, which, for me, just instinctively, like, that's a slow linebacker. Like, if I
yeah,
see...
Yeah. Things, except for Victor Hobson, but that was, like, he did that on purpose. He actually knew that people looked and saw that he had a neck roll and thought he was going to be slow. But yeah. Yes, I mean, it would not be a Michigan-Washington game without at least one linebacker wearing a neck roll.
So they have some, if they can get a running back matched up on him, I think they have room. And if any of the backup inside linebackers come out, attack them. So, you know, again, this is a good game to use Henning and Corum and Roman Wilson and those kinds of guys.
All right. Special teams. Obviously, Giles Jackson is kind of a major threat on kickoffs. He did not return punts in the Montana game, which is a surprise to me, given their other options. They gave the one return was from a defensive back.
It's Trent McDuffie.
He was their only wide receiver in this game. You can't risk his injury on a punt return.
But you can risk Trent McDuffie. He's like he is the defense. I mean, I don't want to get into that silly argument again. Well, you know, the using Ronnie Bell thing, but that was a. That was interesting to me that they didn't do it. I'm sure Michigan's just going to kick it out of the back of the end zone. Like, you do not want Giles Jackson to return one in Michigan Stadium. That would just destroy the fields.
Their kicker was a little questionable last year. I think he hit 6-9, but he was 19-21 in 2019. So he'll probably be solid. He missed one against Montana. I don't expect him to be a college kicker with a hashtag. And their punter, they got hit with a couple of 20-yard returns against Montana, so there might be some room there, except Caden Colasar is probably going to be returning punts, so probably not a big candidate to rip off huge returns, but I don't know. You're like Team Colasar in all ways. So.
Well, he's Johnny Colasar's kid, I remind you. And Johnny Colasar was pretty good at returning kicks as well. But no, I don't think – I mean, I watched the game, too, and I saw that, you know, Caden was – leaning, the slider looked like it was going to, you know, let it bounce and don't try to return anything. And I mean, that's fine. Their punter is a big leg dude, though. He's I think he's like a sixth or seventh year. He's been around forever.
All right, predictions. Seth.
33-11.
Jesus. Alex.
Let's go with 22-10.
I think I put down 23-11, so... There you go. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back, and we're going to talk with Phil Brabs, who was involved in a Washington game you may remember.
At Peak Wealth, we believe we can help you retire with confidence. It's Nick Hopwood, certified financial planner from
Peak Wealth Management
in Plymouth. I graduated from Michigan in 2001 with an econ degree and founded Peak Wealth Management in 2014. Now we have over $240 million of assets under management. As a freshman in 97, winning the national championship in football and hockey didn't get any better than that. Both my wife and I lived in Bursley that year, and it's crazy because we never actually met while living in the same dorm. Probably because she had a car and I had to ride the bus. But we named our dog Bursley anyway, and he's on the payroll here at Peak Wealth Management. At Peak, we're fee-based. We're your fiduciary, which means everything we recommend is always in your best interest. We partner with leading institutional money managers, focus on low fees, to make sure every client has a financial plan covering retirement, college, tax, estate, insurance, and cash flow. Simply put, we are
Peak Wealth Management,
your comprehensive financial coach. Book your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homesure Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homesure Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homesurelending.com. That's H-O-M-E-S-U-R-E lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
Radio 7.1. Now welcoming Phil Grabs, well-known as a former Michigan kicker who made some of the kicks.
and Heisman candidate. And Heisman candidate. We had the Phil Grabs for Heisman. I was the president of the Phil Grabs for Heisman fan club in 2002.
Yeah. Well, and of course, was it the last time we played Washington that this happened? Has it been that long?
Yeah.
Well, last time Michigan played Washington, Phil Grabs strode out there, believed in himself, unlike everybody else in the stadium, and made a game-winning kick. So welcome to the podcast, Phil Grabs.
Thanks for the intro. I appreciate it, Brian.
Yeah, man. Like, that was I was mentioning in the in the pre that, like, you know, I pulled up at my NCAA 2003 stats on you, and they had you as an 84 leg, like for leg for kick power, and a 54 for kick accuracy. So I don't know if that was accurate, but we got into the first game of the season, and it seemed like it was pretty accurate.
Yeah, no one talks about my kickoffs. I mean, I had a ton of touchbacks that year. No one wants to talk about the touchbacks.
They weren't just touchbacks. They were through the uprights. You were putting them through the uprights. I remember that specifically. That was...
Wait. Yeah. No, it was Nienberg who absolutely annihilated someone, right? Like, there was a kickoff, and he just destroyed the returner. So.
Yeah. Well, that's something we try to do, man. We try to be more than just kickers out there. I had seven tackles that year in 2002. I led the team in fumble recoveries.
Yes, that was part of the Heisman campaign.
I caught a pass, I ran the ball. I mean, come on.
And until the until the second to last game, you led the team in yards per carry, and then Calvin Bell just like got another one of those end arounds and passed you by by a yard. So like you were leading the team by yards per carry as well from the one fake.
I mean. I none of those stats like seem like encouraging from a team perspective.
Well, he had what was it? It was one carry for what was it 9 yards or something? It was like the
I think it's the seven tackles that bothers me the most.
So what you understand is, you know, not this means anything to anyone, but I was an all conference defensive back, and we won the state championship my junior year. So my goal was to play football in college. I just happened to have a really strong leg, and I could have done D2, been a receiver, been a DB, but I wanted to play at the highest level with the best team. And so when I was out on the field, that was my chance to be a football player. And so field goals can't really do much unless they can handle the ball or throw you the ball, which Lloyd did twice. But when I ran down, I ran down like I was going to hit someone. So I wasn't a safety. I would stay 5 yards behind my coverage. My tackles were already like inside the 25. So.
I see.
And then Troy Nienberg followed my. He saw what I was doing, and you know, so did Adam Finley at punting. You see Adam Finley watching his punts from 2002, 2003. He's down there taking guys' legs out.
Yeah, I knew Adam Finley was an athlete. Like, see, they always talked about that whenever he went out to punt. They'd be like, Adam Finley used to be a linebacker. Blah blah.
Didn't Penn State have like a really big kicker who just leveled a guy, and it was a meme for a week or something?
Joey Julius. Is that his name?
Joey Julius.
Yeah,
I think he leveled a Michigan player. In fact,
yes, because it was the business decision. That's where the word business decision, because he leveled Jordan Lewis because Peppers didn't block for him, and Peppers was like made a business decision.
I mean, the guy was like, I'm opting out of this one.
Smart.
Like a bowl game in Maryland. I'm not playing that one.
So Phil, you were telling me too that you weren't just any defense. Like you were able to score against Ronnie Bellamy in practice. I want to hear that one.
Oh, Bellamy. Oh yeah. So Bellamy and I are good friends, and if you watch the kick, Bellamy gives me a hug before the kick, and he's the first guy to hug me after the kick. Before we got just buried by the rest of the team. But yeah, we showed up freshman year and, you know, we went to Oosterbaan. I don't know what we were doing. We were messing around, but I think Navarro and Minery were throwing the ball because Minery was a quarterback back then. Mm-hmm. But I was like, hey, Bellamy, I'll cover you. You cover me. And, I don't think he knew exactly what he was getting from the kick. He probably thought, okay, this sounds great. So I covered him. You know, I knew I played DB. I shut him down. I wasn't going to let him go. I knew he was going to try to go deep on me. I gave him plenty of room. Uh-huh. And then I get up to 7. Well, you know, I'm pretty good. Back then, I was pretty quick and pretty fast. So I just did the route that I beat everyone on was just quick out, mm-hmm. show for the ball. I said, Minnery, give him a pump fake. He'll bite. I don't even know if he ever played DB. He bit on the pump fake. I headed out the sidelines. Minnery or Navarre hit me in stride, and that was, you know, my last, you know, offensive play in Mr. Bond. So I was done.
Bellamy did play defensive back. They had to pull him over to cornerback the like a few years before, I remember. What was it, like 2000 that he had to play? Like I distinctly remember, I think, going into the Michigan State game, we were so low on defensive backs that Terrell actually played defensive backs against Plaxico, and then like we were trying everybody, and Bellamy, I'm sure, was one of them that they got pulled over there.
the Plaxico game?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I was there. I was in the Michigan State student section for that one. That was wearing my Michigan gear. That was pleasant.
Are they commemorating you at all at this game? Are you going to be on the field?
I'll be on the field for the game. So they're pretty kind because, you know, I'm still battling cancer. I've been more private about it the last go around, but the last 2 years I've been taking chemo. The pandemic's actually allowed me I was probably going to be home much anyways. But I'm pretty immune compromised at this point. And then I took an antibody test, actually 2 different antibody tests, and they both came back negative after being vaccinated. So I don't know how well I would fare with the Delta variant, but I don't want to find out. So I wasn't going to be in the stands. And so they said, no, how about you come on the sidelines? And so I'll be on the sidelines. I don't know if they're going to do anything special beyond that. I'm just happy to be down there on the field and with the team during the game.
Yeah, that'll be really nice. I was wondering if they were going to invite Denard back because it's 10 years on from UTL-1, and I would like to see that on the board. Hopefully with the Don Creaky call as well. I don't know if they can get the rights to that one, but who knows?
No, I think they were just I think Don Creaky just went around like issuing takedowns for that specific call. Like everybody who had a YouTube of that lost it this week.
Seriously?
Yeah, because we were, our old friend and trusted agent Ace Anbender got a Twitter takedown until he like had to read something that said he's not allowed to share this anymore.
I really hope that Don Creaky is doing this himself. Like, he's just searching for his own name, and whenever he finds it, he like issues his own DMCA takedown because he's just so mad.
That was. Yeah, man. So how much do you remember that Washington game, Phil? Like, for people who don't remember it, but basically you missed the first 2 kicks. They had Nienberg take another one without 4 minutes left in the game. We were down.
Minute 27.
Yeah.
That's how long I would be. Yeah.
And then the last one was what was it, 49?
I like that better. It was 44 yards. Yeah,
it felt like 59 inside the stadium.
Well, it was 59, if you remember, with 9 seconds left, Navarre overthrew everybody.
Yeah.
And, we were set up for a 59-yarder, but Washington had 12 men on the field after the timeout, and so it was a 15-yard penalty moving it from 59 to 44.
Right. Yeah, that was the year that Navarre just put everything on every single pass. I remember several throws from that game. Bellamy got wide open downfield, and he overshot him. Braylon got, and I think this was like the first Braylon game. Like this was like the first game, like as fans, we ever saw Braylon kind of out there.
Chris Perry too kind of had he had played the previous year, but Perry I think kind of won his job over at PJ Askew, I think, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, they were back and forth all that year, but like that was because Perry had that first carry that that went for a touchdown.
We thought that blue thing was wide open, and we just felt like it was going to be we were going to trounce them after they kind of, I say, stole it the year before. Like, I remember the year before that playing in Seattle, and then I remember every detail of the 2002. I mean, you put so much effort into, like, I mean, what, that one play was 5 seconds long.
Yeah.
But, like, all the time of, like, weightlifting, running, practice, two-a-days, meals. It's
right.
Kind of crazy how much you put in just that. Those guys would be in the stadium, what, for, you know, 60 minutes or whatever it is, you know, and it's they won't forget those moments, especially when it's that dramatic like it was. That Washington, for those that went, I mean, You had College Game Day there.
Yeah.
The game last year, we were up by 2 scores. We have a blocked field goal that goes back for a touchdown. 2 plays later, Navarro throws an interception that goes back for a touchdown, and we lose the game. It was like we were about to be Washington on the road. We haven't done very well with Pac-10, 12, 16, whatever they're called nowadays, teams. Yeah. And we lost that game. And you know how back then it was like you lose one game, it's like your season just feels deflated.
Yeah.
So there was so much riding on this game. It was hot. I mean, it was there weren't night games back then, right? You guys remember. There were no lights.
Yeah.
So it was just going to be noon or 3:30 and hot.
I think I remember it being fairly early, because what I remember about that game was Red Bull was brand new and we didn't know what this thing was yet.
Yeah.
And they drove around with Red Bull trucks and gave them out to all the college students who were partying outside. And I lived on State Street right in like Red Bull Central. So we had no idea what they'd just given us, but we took it all. And we just, I had a lot of them, and then we were mixing it with whatever we could find. And I walked into the stadium with like a thing like filled. It was like a Coke bottle filled with Red Bull and whatever we just bought at Campus Corner on the way. So we were psycho. Our section was like very loud, and after they scored their first touchdown, they had to kick right at us, and like we blocked their field goal. And I think it was Shanti Orr, who was not our tallest guy, but like. He kicked it on such a low angle that it got blocked, and we were all screaming, "That's right! That's right! You blocked us! We block you!" Like it was.
Yeah, maybe we should be handing out Red Bull tomorrow on State Street.
I think the students today are a little smarter than we were.
No, they do other things
because
they know what Red Bull is now.
Yes. Yeah, well,
all college students have the exact same level of intelligence, like in a like aggregate sense.
Right, right. Well, when you throw college football into the mix, it always amplifies the college dumbness anyway. But we were starting low at the beginning. I think we were probably some of the dumbest people at Michigan to start with, and then you add Red Bull and alcohol and the fact that we just knew a lot about football and we felt like it was our job to make that kick or miss. And then we blocked him on his second, it was Anderson, right? We blocked his second field goal attempt too. So we thought we brought it on you because we'd already like screamed at their kicker so much. And then you were kicking into into us as well. And we're like, oh no, what'd we do?
I was just taking your negative energy. I wasn't, it's hard to escape,
First time Red Bull energy. Yeah, man. And then that was also the game that Marlon was just living in Reggie Williams' shirt.
Yeah, he set a program record for number of PBUs in one game.
Oh, he was
in like the third quarter.
Yeah.
they announced it, and everybody's like, ooh, and I was like, God damn, it's the third quarter.
Their quarterback, I forget his name now, but he had kind of like a pop gun arm. But his only thing he could throw was a fade. So he kept on throwing fades, and like either was to Reggie, and he would be covered by Marlon, or like we were calling it double Curry coverage, because every single time he threw into double coverage, it was both Currys that were underneath it.
Yeah, the only other game I remember like that where it was just clear that it doesn't matter what was happening, that the quarterback was going to throw to one wide receiver, was Jordan Lewis versus Aaron Burbridge.
Yes, yes.
And
thanks for bringing that game up, Michigan fans.
Michigan State fans were like, "Oh, he got like 120 yards against this guy. He sucks." And I'm like, "It took 19 targets."
Yes,
19 targets.
Yeah,
so, yeah. Those are the two outstanding. Every pass goes to the same guy. Games in my memory.
Yeah, I do you remember the game?
Oh no, wait! There is the Akron guy.
Oh God! You're bringing up all the greatest hits, aren't you? Well, let's remember the 2013 Akron game.
That
was a fun one.
20 catches in that game. He literally had 20 catches in this game.
Yeah,
Phil, you don't really need to be here for this. We're just reminiscing about terrible losses past, as we do on our podcast.
One of them was the Akron game was a win.
Was it?
Yes. Yeah, that was on Rosh Hashanah, and my brother and I were like, okay, we get it, and we left, and Michigan finally came back and won it.
We did.
Well.
Yeah.
Old glories. Beating Akron. Beating Washington.
Phil, what are you doing now? What's the Is Cancer Kicker still the program, or what's it called now?
No. I started a tech company in town, and then through that with a good friend of mine, and then I sold out my co-founder, and then actually had an opportunity to come and teach at Ross. So,
you got your old umich.edu address back?
What's that? Oh, yeah, it was kind of crazy. I'm like, does this still work? So
sure, no, it's unique. Yeah. They never give away your unique name.
They don't.
So like our generation are the first ones who got those. So
no, I am bcook at umich.edu, and I feel like there are just hundreds and thousands of people who have cursed my very existence.
I know.
Get to Michigan, and their unique name is like BRCK214 Cook.
Yep, and our whole generation is just like, you know, here you go.
It's your name. It's so funny because, you know, I'm with these students. I look at their unique names. It's kind of dorky, but it's like, I'm thinking like, oh, first initial, last name. Like, it's never like that anymore. It's like Brooke, B-R-O, three letters or last name. Like, they're mixing things up. They're throwing numbers in there. So looks like we've expanded. But so I'm teaching tech and entrepreneurship. I run some programs there. Basically taking my experience, my 20 years of industry experience in both tech and entrepreneurship and shedding along the next generation and trying to raise up some tech entrepreneurs.
Okay. Are you doing that all virtual right now, or have you been in school?
Yeah, I've been virtual since March of last year, which has been nuts to think about. I've not gone back because of my immune system.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of pardoned for now. I mean, I prefer to be back. You know, I'm in my home office right here, and, you know, I'm kind of sick of this view, but it works. It's okay. I mean, it's been great being back at the university. I mean, it's just the students' energy and excitement, and I feel like the kids are a lot smarter than when, I mean, they just seem smarter. They probably are. Look at the test scores.
Yeah.
I don't know. My ACT score wasn't that great. Maybe it was my leg, but yeah, it's just good to be back.
Or your receiver skills.
Yeah, and I don't think they knew they got that. It took them a while to figure that out. It took 4 years for them to figure out that.
Do your students?
Yeah. Catch.
Do your students know that you were an athlete? Do they know? I mean, I'm sure none of them are old enough to even remember the game.
Yeah, no. Well, so I work with a lot of MBAs, so they tend to be a little bit older. I've had an instance where like one of my students was like a washing game. That was the first game I went to. My dad took me when I was six. Well, I was 22, so we're not the same age. But yeah, so they it kind of permeates a little bit. People figure it out, you know. Most of them might not. It'll be interesting if they do something in the big house and they see my name on. You know, I assume they'll play the Washington kick.
Right, right.
So that'll be interesting. But
the good one, not the other two.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But Ross is a great place to be. Everyone's phenomenal there.
All right. Is there anything we can promote for you right now? Like, we got you got an audience here.
I mean, I think I've shifted a stage in life where it's like, how can I help? Honestly, yeah. Like I've been through a lot. You know, I've been through cancer, kind of still going through cancer. I started two different tech companies. That's first one didn't end very well, so I've had some pain from there. But I've learned a ton. So. My passion is really kind of the intersection of like tech, entrepreneurship, and impact.
Okay.
So if there's anyone out there that's, you know, has started a business, wants to grow it, I love just kind of sharing any insight, you know, listen to them, guiding them, helping them in any way. I mean, that's kind of what I live and do at Ross and Breathe to Do is help people along in their tech startup. So yeah, I think I'm good, man. My kids are getting old. I mean, I got 15-year-old, 13-year-old, 11-year-old, which I don't even think is like mathematically possible, it doesn't seem like. I feel like I'm a lot younger. But then
I'm younger, too, because I'm your age, and I don't know how you – those kids.
You didn't wait very long to have kids.
Yeah.
I got a son at Pioneer, sophomore. I mean, if you could help him become faster, stronger, and leaner. He wants to be a tight end at D1 level, and – I've been trying to convince them to be really tall. Like, that's great for punting. I'm an engineering major. I think, Brian, you're engineering. Were you engineering, Brian? Yeah.
Yes.
We all have to take physics courses. And so, like, I know how levers work. Like, I know how, like, mass, velocity, like, momentum, all that stuff. So I'm like, dude, your physics say you should be a puncher. Like, you'd be an amazing puncher. Or a kicker if you want to, like, take that stress on. But he passed. He wants to be a tight end. So he's tall. He's already over 6'2", and he's 180, and I was 6'2", 175 when I graduated high school, and he's a sophomore. So But he needs to get stronger, faster, meaner. And that's what Jay Harbaugh said. You want to play tight end, you want to be fast, strong, and mean. So I just tell him the same thing. Like, that's what Jay says. I don't know. He's the tight ends coach, so do what he says. But I was a kicker, man. I mean, I can help with math. I can help with math. You need math? I'm here, man.
You're selling yourself short. You're a Heisman candidate, and I'm going to find that old document. This was a movement, man. Like, this was like we were like all in the fishbowl. Like, there was everyone had to do their work in the fishbowl back then.
I missed this movement. I was about North Campus studying, probably. I know.
Yeah. Well, it was all the people who were like in the fishbowl at like 2 a.m. They had the place open all night. So like the people who really wanted to wait to the last minute getting their papers done and then didn't want to do their work, we would all just sit around and come up with Phil Brabs or Heisman articles and send them to ESPN and see if somebody would print them. But it was awesome. There were a lot of us. Anyway, I it's good talking to you. Really good being able to see you. I know you've been through a lot more than a couple startups, and the fact that you look great and you're making it through this is pretty awesome.
I do the Peloton every morning, so keeps me looking like halfway decent.
All right. Phil, go ahead.
All right, we're going to take a break, come back, and we're going to explore what Seth learned in his first UFR. Well, first.
Real one.
In-season UFR.
In-season UFR, yeah. If you want to see where our post-game podcast happens, or if you need a spot to land in Ann Arbor, check out 4M, Prentice Partners' beautiful brand-new flagship property at 830 Henry Street in Lower Burns Park and across the bridge from the Big House. Their 11 spacious 6-bedroom, 6-bath suites feature state-of-the-art digital capabilities and are laid out for comfortable, efficient collaboration. You can also rent a 4M unit for shorter stays, say if you want to come to town for a football weekend. I want to add myself that they're also taking over Lucky's. We're really excited about their plans for that space. So if you're by the stadium, swing by 830 Henry or visit Prentice4M.com. It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, trying to collect sizes and payments for a family reunion, or, ordering a whole bunch of shirts with your Kickstarter, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with their easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, wasting time trying to sort out the order. They'll set it up. You can just sit back and relax. They'll even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit them at any of their convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Here's a thing people say. Seth, tell me about your insurance.
I'm actually glad you asked me about that because I just changed my insurance and I'm really happy I did.
Let me guess, you use Phil Klein and Owen Rosen of the Phil Klein Insurance Group.
They are MGO blog readers and they don't advertise during football games.
And they've got a 5-star rating on anything you would care to see. Call Owen at 248-682-7445 or visit them online at philklineinsurance.com.
During these challenging times, it is important to have a Michigan man in your corner. If you or someone in your life has questions, concerns, or just want to discuss your legal rights, give attorney Jonathan Paul a call at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com. John asks you all to be safe. We're going to get through this together. And as always, go blue. Welcome back. That was Phil Brabs' last segment. This segment is going to be about everything I learned from UFRing, other than my sleep deprivation issue, which I guess you've experienced before. But first, I want to thank that we are on a we are broadcasting this live from SignalWire, which is the virtual office platform we discovered during the pandemic because it is way better than Zoom, especially for audio. We also learned they are huge MGO blog nerds. If you're ready to not be using Zoom and Slack for everything, try SignalWire.com. Use the code Muppets, and they'll buy your team lunch. Also wanted to shout out Goat Motor, the Chicago-based funk rock band who provided the music for this episode.
Goat Motor?
Goat Motor.
Goat Motor.
Goat Motor.
Wow. All right.
I saw the name, and I was like, yep, we're using that for Washington.
Washington State, I could see, but like Washington.
I made the reference to, yeah, anyway. Anyway, UFO.
All right, so I think one of the things that really leapt out was you just, like, adored all the running backs in a way. And, like, my running back grading was always very controversial.
Well,
hey, this should have gotten more yards, and you're just like, sprinkles and fairy dust, and like, did nothing go wrong with the running backs?
No, nothing at all went wrong with the running backs. I didn't see them miss a single cut. I didn't see them miss a single lane. Like, I mean, there were plays where I did not plus them, right? There were plays where I was like, okay, you know, they got what they got. Not that many of them. Like, most of the time, there was something a running back did that, maybe I was a little, like, happy at the end with Corum, like, bursting through, like, but I mean, like, I've watched a lot of football, and I did a lot of this charting for other teams, right? And I used the same charting for them that I cheered for us, and I don't remember loving, like, every team's running, because that's not true, right? I love a lot of running backs that we played against, but that we've played a lot of good running backs.
I do think that your grading tends to higher numbers than mine, which is fine. It's just you got to, like, calibrate
what
the numbers mean. People are always like, hey, can we do something statistical with these? And I was like, no.
No.
That's not how it works. So I put the numbers down, and then I got to talk about the numbers, and it means nothing without context.
Yeah.
But
well, I tried throwing EPA on there. Did you see that? The expected points added statistic. Which I thought might be interesting just to kind of see, like, you know, was this 3 point expected points or whatever.
And then the other thing that kind of leapt out on the offense is that you thought Vastardis had a really good game.
He did. Well, I mean, you saw the Henning play, right? And then afterwards, Sam was actually mentioning to me that, like, go back and watch it again and see what he did to the defensive end. Because he comes in like he's going to attack the defensive end and then kicks out. And the DE is just like, wait a minute, I thought I was getting blocked. So they don't even have to block him. And then he gets out and reaches a linebacker. The other thing that Bastardus was doing pretty regularly, I saw, was, you know, they had two DTs. Ralph Holly, who's a little undersized and likes to shoot into the backfield. And I... sure, that's why PFF loves him, because they always do that. And then they had another DT who I thought was garbage. So the Ralph Holly kept on jumping into the backfield on different sides of Vastardis. And Vastardis always had, like, that Graham Glasgow-esque, you know, preternatural ability to understand where he was going and lock him where he needed to be. And that created a lot of the interior running lanes, especially late in the game, where Vastardis was just getting, you know, half points just by locking that guy in after he got a shot upfield.
So one thing I was curious about is it seemed that Michigan kind of found another gear in the ground game about, I don't know, a quarter in, maybe halfway through the second quarter. And to me, that felt like it was associated with the deep shots that McNamara hit to Bell twice and that Western had kind of backed off. And that was a reason for increased success on the ground. Did you find any evidence of that?
I mean, basically exactly that. The safeties were lining up. They were coming down to like 7 yards once it was clear that Michigan was only going to run. And so then they backed off. But I mean, they crept forward again because Michigan, after that Bell, the Bell touchdown, Michigan went on a 18-play streak that went into the McNamara time where they did not throw the ball past the line of scrimmage.
You mean McCarthy, right?
McCarthy, when McCarthy came in. So, like, up until McCarthy came in, and, you know, that's backup hour, literally, they really didn't throw the ball downfield again. And so the safeties were creeping up again. I think by then, though, Western's, like, defense kind of sagged as they were going along and kind of they were giving up. So, like, by the end, like, Carter Seltzer was locking two of them out, and they had no interest in being part of this anymore because they were just getting beat up inside.
Any performance on offense that we're currently sleeping on that we haven't mentioned yet?
I mean, we can't see, could see anything about the receivers, right? There were 11 throws in this game, and most of them were screens. So, I mean, not really. I think that we maybe overrated McCarthy's performance because of the one throw.
Yeah.
Which was the one throw, but he was...
Yeah, he had a lot of opportunities to hit Henning in particular underneath, and those were often behind him. He was behind Selzer.
Yeah, that was the thing. Like, I saw when he was going after Henning, there were throws wide open downfield. Roman Wilson was actually more open the second time than he was the first time.
Oh, yeah.
And the first time, I went in thinking that was going to be a bad read. I was like, how could you miss that? Because I remember watching the game, and, you know, we all saw Roman Wilson running free. But when I went and saw that, it was actually one of those plays where, like, Zinter was in, and they tried to pass with Zinter the first time, and Zinter was wearing a club on his right hand. So anytime they tried to pass, Zinter could not pass block on his right side at all, which probably contributed to why they were so run-heavy, because when he was on the ground, he was just mauling these guys. But there were some guys I knew to watch on Western, and some guys I was just like, yeah, whatever. Like, you know, whatever happens to that guy is not really going to be relevant. So,
and then we talked about, this is going to be a hard question to answer, but we talked about, you know, a lack of reads.
Yeah.
And there are actions in the offense that look like there is a post-snap read attached to them, flares where you're running the other way, that kind of thing. do we have any feeling about, like, how live those are?
I think that they were turned off. There are a couple of them in there. First of all, I think that they turned off any quarterback keeps whatsoever. But sure, they got down to the goal line, and, I mean, my best I can figure is that they probably practiced a goal line play that has that in there, and then forgot. And McCarthy's just like, well, I'm supposed to hand off now. So he handed off, but, like, that was the most obvious keep read in the history of keep reads. And, I mean, it wasn't just a shuffling end. That guy was just diving after Haskins. So that play annoyed me because it just burned 4 points in the context of the game, whatever. But I think that they were doing something where they were, like, reading the defensive end or making the defensive end think he was being read when he was actually looking at a linebacker behind him or looking for the that screen. But they almost never threw it, even when it was wide open. Like, there was a vintage Rich Rod play where, like, they're running zone one side and they're they have the bubble screen going the other side, and the bubble was wide open. It was just two guys out there for two blockers and a receiver. And, I mean, he did not read it. He didn't throw it. Like, he didn't do anything but hand the ball off right into a swarm of guys. So I think the reads were just turned off in this game, and it just annoyed me because it's like, why have it in there if you're not going to practice it?
Yeah, let's we'll see against Washington, I guess. It's slightly concerning.
Yeah.
On the other side of the ball, you liked Vincent Gray, which is good news, I guess.
Is there anything, did you see anything in the game that Vincent Gray was not doing well? Like,
well, so there were a couple of times where I felt like he had been beaten deep. There was a drop that kind of looked like he had an impact on making it a drop, and then on review it's like, that was just a drop. So I'm a little concerned still about
it. So I went and reviewed that one particularly a lot, and the ball came down and hit the guy's shoulder, so he misjudged it a little bit and it pounced off his shoulder. If he had caught it in his chest, if he had caught it anywhere where he was able to actually bring it in, that rake would have knocked it out. Like, Gray is punching down on the chest. Very visual podcast, everyone just not watching on YouTube right now. And, like, the ball comes down just off the chest on the shoulder and bounces off the shoulder pad. So I think he would have raked it out had it been catchable, or, you know, had he made the catch, unless it was, like, some ridiculous catch where he, like, actually pulls it in off of his shoulder. But as soon as it came down to his chest, that's where Gray's hand was. Plus, that guy was, like, he's supposed to be a speedster. Like, the only thing that guy is just speed. He was not a big guy at all, but he was, like, the fastest guy on Western's team by a lot. Had some Power 5 offers because he was just runny, fast guy. And, I mean, Vincent Gray kept up with him, and everything else from Gray, like, there were a lot of throwaways where he would just be, like, with the receiver. I couldn't really tell, like, how good his coverage was until the throwaway. But, like, you know, there were a few times where he just got a plus one coverage by being on his guy better than Jamon Green was, and then they threw it at Jamon Green.
All right. So give me the defensive tackle pecking order, in your opinion.
They all like were so close. Like Smith was a plus point 1.5. Hinton came out plus one, and Jeter came out plus one. I'm a little nervous because that's defensive line is supposed
concerning.
To be.
Yeah, that's supposed to be a pointy place with many points.
Yes, and they were not. I think maybe the whole thing was they were using double. They were those guys were taking on doubles, and then like the Cahill Green would like. Just slam himself into one of the guys who were doubling them if they ever had a little trouble. But they,
well, okay, but like that, are you? If you hold up to a double, it feels like that's a point. And
they would be losing.
Sometimes it's easy to miss those kind of things.
Yeah, well, what happened was they'd be like the typical play would be like Hinton's taking on a double, and the double is moving him like half a yard or a yard. And as soon as it looks like he's having a little bit of trouble, Nakihill Green screams out of nowhere and slams into the guard. And then the center all of a sudden is just doing Hinton alone and gets destroyed. Or Smith like had a new push-pull move. And like if he brought that out a little bit faster each time, he probably would have had a few TFLs. He'd get caught a little bit and then do the push-pull move, and a couple times it ran off his back while he was doing it. And then Jeter was probably the one involved in the most plays, but was still the same Jeter, right? Like last year he didn't really pop out, but he's there. He's not like ruining things. But I'm wondering if we have to adjust our expectations on these guys for defensive linemen just because... You know, 4-3 defensive line, you have a gap. And your job is to dominate your gap and, you know, try to get in the backfield and try to, you know, disrupt things. And I think that these guys are mostly being coached to keep that line, you know, just plugged up, just trying to make like a big mess up there so that the running back has to cut out somewhere. And when as soon as he does, you know, Ross is going to be there or Nakihill Green's going to slam into him. Or, you know, if he goes to Aiden Hutchinson's side, he was dead.
And you really liked Hill Green.
I would say I like the potential for Hill Green. I don't want to overstate the but like, you know, our feels for linebackers usually is like, you know, if they come out even, that was a pretty good game for a linebacker. And
no, like, to be clear, even is I guess the Mendoza line for linebackers.
Right.
Like it's like if you got zero, you had an okay game.
Yeah. So he
for
got
defensive
zero.
Linemen, you need to be putting up major plus points to hit the Mendoza line.
Right.
That's a make plays position, and linebacker is, like, hard.
Yeah, linebacker's hard. And linebacker in this defense looks really hard. Ross had a very Jonas Mouton score. He was plus 12.5, minus 12. The guesses that we had about where this defense is, how this defense plays, were correct. That we said, like, the defensive line is just there to kind of soak up things, and then the linebackers have to read, and they have to get out there and make plays, and sometimes dodge a guy to get out there. And Ross, I mean, was making mistakes that you would definitely don't want to see your senior making. Hill Green's mistakes seemed a lot easier to fix. Like, he got sucked in one time too much on play action near the goal line on that first drive. And there was a big missed tackle he had, and those were, like... I mean, his minus 5 points, that's the first four out of his minus five. So, like, I felt those things were fixable, and the rest of his, like, he didn't bother me out there. Ross was doing a lot of things that were like, Josh! Like, there was one play where Hutchinson, I mean, just whipped the left tackle. And he's about to get a thunder sack if the first read isn't just wide open. It's wide open because it was a quick crosser across the linebacker, and that was Ross. And Ross doesn't get his hand on him, he doesn't step with him, and doesn't even go with him for the first few steps. He's still watching to see if it's a handoff when he's just got a guy crossing him like that. And like, that is not a play that's like new for this defense. That's not like a, you know, McDonald came in and changed everything up. That's a linebacker play in any defense whatsoever. And to see Ross missing that play, it was just like, maybe there's too much on his plate, or maybe it's first game jitters, maybe there's an explanation, but it was really disappointing to see that kind of play out of your senior linebacker.
All right. In terms of defensive line depth, did any of our backup defensive ends, backup defensive tackles seem...
Morris is, I think Morris might be the real deal. I mean, he didn't get in a whole lot. He's a little bit of an odd duck for this defense, but I think it might actually work because he's not a full defensive tackle. He's not a full defensive end.
He's like the Wormley type.
He's an anchor. He's a Don Brown anchor.
Yeah.
But Don Brown found another anchor, I think. And, I mean, you can use that guy in this defense. And he actually gave them some ability to kind of switch up their fronts while he was out there. So one play he plays outside linebacker. The next play he's got his hand in the ground and he's playing, 3-4 defensive end. And not like defensive tackle like we've been talking about where, like, you know, it's Hinton in there against a guard. Like, he was playing Wisconsin-style defensive end, and he was good at it. He was really good. I mean,
all right. You probably need to clarify what Wisconsin-style defensive end needs for the readership, and maybe me.
I just mean their defensive ends are closer to defensive ends than defensive tackles. They're more Chris Wormley types, okay, as opposed to our defensive ends who are really, you know, really defensive tackles. Chris Hinton, yeah. So
defensive ends,
right? Well, yeah, and then our outside linebackers are really defensive ends. But we did see some of that 5-2. Or so the 5-1 defense, which we kind of were like, how is that going to work? And pretty much saw how it's going to work is, one, Aiden Hutchinson just destroys one side of the line. So you don't even have
that
to worry about
that. That stuff is just short yardage, right? That's
no, no,
really
they
a whole lot of that.
No, they use that on 2nd and 6. They use that in a
Did
couple
they?
Of Yeah, they popped right. it a couple times. The way it's supposed to work is you don't really have to worry about anyone popping out of Aiden Hutchinson's side. So the linebacker just kind of has to read, I think, a few gaps on the front side because he's playing both linebacker jobs, really. And then the idea is gum up everything, and then the linebacker has to see where the play is going and make the play. And it's really just all up to him. And that was part of why Ross was getting his his plus minus is jumping up too, because it was I wanted to see better from him, but I don't want to like overstate it. Ross was not terrible, and they put a lot on his plate.
All right, last thing. Tell me how awesome Dax is.
I like the coach now. I like that he's a nickel now. Like that is. He's right in the middle of everything. They tried him the one time at against the slot receiver, and he batted that away. So, yeah, man. And he was against Sky Moore. He's getting really nothing against him. So that was like the one player they have.
All right. Well, that's the Western Michigan recap. We've talked about a Washington team that looks like they're in a pretty bad place. So 8 o'clock tomorrow.
Boris is the mayor and the land surveyor with plans of his own. He hates Aruska, he hates Volta, banned from his home. He hates Aruska,
Ruska,
vodka,
vodka.
He never drank a single drop. He hates Aruska,
Ruska,
vodka,
vodka.
This poison he swears to stop.